and we'll continue to fight to ensure that women have access and support no matter the choice they make.
Mr. Riley.
He's lying to you. He's lying to you.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, the New York 19 debate. The race for New York's 19th House District seat is one of the most expensive in the entire nation this cycle, and one of the most closely contested. Democratic challenger Josh Riley is hoping to get closer than the two-point defeat in his matchup with Congressman Mark Molinaro in 2022. Molinaro, a first-term Republican, is hoping to be re-elected during a year when he says many voters are angry. The two candidates are only going to debate once before Election Day, and I was a panelist on the debate, co-hosted by WAMC, WNYT, WMHT, and the Times Union, the Upstate Debate Consortium. The 19th District is sprawling across upstate New York from just south of Albany all the way to Ithaca and Binghamton. And as you'll hear, when the candidates met on the debate stage, they did not pull their punches.
Good evening, I'm Mark Mulholland. Welcome to the 19th Congressional Debate live from our WNYT studio here in Menands. This debate is co-sponsored by a consortium of the Capital Region's leading media outlets. Joining me as panelists tonight, Ian Pickus, the news director of WAMC. Chantel Destra, the managing editor of WMHT's New York Now, and Raga Justin, investigative reporter at the Times Union newspaper. The 19th Congressional District is sprawling. It stretches from the Massachusetts border across the Catskills and along the southern tier to Ithaca. It includes Columbia, Greene, and part of Rensselaer County. Roughly 770,000 people live in the 19th District. Let's get to the ground rules for tonight's debate. Each candidate will have 90 seconds to give an opening statement. The order was determined by a coin toss a short time ago here in our studio. When candidates are asked a question, they have 90 seconds to answer, and their opponent has 45 seconds to respond. I have discretion to give extra time if needed. We will also have a brief lightning round where each candidate has 10 seconds to answer. At the end of the debate, each candidate will have 30 seconds to deliver his closing statement. The candidate who delivers the first opening statement will deliver the last closing statement. Our audience has agreed to hold applause during the debate, except for right now, as I introduce the candidates, Republican Congressman Mark Molinaro and Democrat Josh Riley. Gentlemen, good evening to
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
So our order was determined by a coin flip tonight. Mr. Molinaro will first to go first and deliver his opening statements. Mr. Molinaro.
I chose public service a long time ago because I think it's a dignified duty. It is our responsibility as citizens to engage. And when I began in local government, I learned then what I know now. The decisions we make have real impacts on real people. Fast forward to today, where I now have the highest honor of my lifetime to serve and represent the people of upstate New York in the House of Representatives. This kid, who grew up on food stamps in a working class family, who watched his stepdad lose his job when IBM downsized, this kid now represents 750,000 people in a part of the state that is wonderful and beautiful. And I have lived in this part of New York my entire life. I never turned my back on the people of upstate New York, and I never will. 2 years ago, Josh Riley and I stood together for election. You rejected his policies and his politics then. Why? Because we've seen over the last 4 years the abandonment of the southern border, which has led to 10 million individuals entering this country. We've seen cashless bail and discovery and raise the age and policy changes here in New York that have made us less safe. These are the policies that he embraced 2 years ago. These are the policies that you embrace yet again. I am committed to serving the people of this district because I know ultimately we are resilient. We care deeply about the families, the farmers, the small businesses, and ultimately we have got to secure our border, keep our communities safe, make our communities affordable again, and ensure that we are creating opportunity for the families, the farmers, and the small businesses that make up this beautiful part of the state of New York.
Mr. Molinaro, thank you. Mr. Riley.
Thank you. Congressman, happy belated birthday to all of our hosts. Thank you. And to our viewers at home, if you are a one-year-old named Mateo or a four-year-old named Patricio, you need to turn off the TV and go to bed. I promise this is not as good as Paw Patrol. I love you. I'll see you in the morning. To everybody else, I'm Josh Riley. I'm running for Congress because of the lessons I learned growing up on Bertel Street in West Endicott. It's a blue-collar neighborhood where just about everybody worked in the factories, and just about nobody cared about your political party. What mattered was your character and your work ethic. Growing up on road trips, we'd pick up the cans and the bottles that folks left behind at the rest areas, and we'd take them down to Roma's on Nanticoke Ave and redeem them for the nickel deposits. I know that for so many of you today, that nickel is not going as far as it used to. In our economy, the deck has been stacked against you, and it's been stacked in favor of big, powerful corporate PACs and the politicians they pay to do what's best for their bottom line, not yours. I'm running for Congress to change that. I don't take corporate PAC money because my vote is not for sale. I'm pushing for term limits because I think we need fewer career politicians and more new ideas. I'm pro-choice because I believe women can make their own healthcare decisions. And I'm serious about solving the crisis at our southern border because today's politicians aren't. I'm looking forward to our discussion, and it'd be my honor to earn your vote.
Mr. Riley, thank you very much. Our first question goes to both candidates, and it is about the tone of the campaign. Mr. Molinaro, your commercials call Mr. Riley a D.C. insider who let in a Peruvian gang leader wanted for 23 murders. And they say Mr. Riley wrote the bill giving amnesty to 12 million illegal immigrants. The question is, do you stand by all of the assertions made in your ads and those of political action committees created on your behalf?
Josh Riley spent the last 20 years working in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. He didn't argue before the Supreme Court once. He argued ultimately before the Supreme Court 32 times to dismantle border security. His very legal argument in defense of Secretary Mayorkas was that the President of the United States didn't have the authority to protect Americans and to unilaterally decide that certain individuals who enter into this country or want to enter this country shouldn't. His legal argument before the Supreme Court was that the President of the United States could ignore Congress and simply wave a magic wand and allow individuals to come in. It was that legal argument 20 years working in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. It was that legal argument that this president used to surrender the southern border. And with it, 10.5 million people come into this country. 10.5 million people come into this country, 1,000 known terrorists who have no interest in America or Americans come into this country. This president used the prosecutorial discretion argument that you made to catch and release. And then they come to New York, where there's a sanctuary state because of your allies, Kathy Hochul and others, who simply think it is not important to protect Americans and enforce the law. So yes, this election has gotten heated. Why? Because Americans see every day they see the Department of Homeland Security saying some 600,000 individual known criminals are in this country. They see jobs being exported for low immigrant wages, and they see crime being committed on their street. And they are tired of insiders like Josh Riley suggesting that somehow they had nothing to do with it. Nonsense. That was your plan. That was your policy. That was your legal argument.
Mr. Molinaro, thank you very much.
I'd like to respond to this.
Well, question allows you to respond to it. Mr. Riley, your ads tell viewers that Mr. Molinaro doesn't respect you enough to be honest. And they accuse Mr. Molinaro of being a sellout to corporate interests, claiming Mark Molinaro takes the money, we pay more. The question is, do you stand by all of the assertions made in your ads and those of political action committees created on your behalf?
You just asked him that question. You know he didn't hear an answer. He didn't answer whether he stands by it. I don't think he does, because I think you know it's not true. I mean, you just heard about him talking about things I did 20 years ago.
This is my time.
And I'll reclaim it. I must have been a heck of a lawyer at 23 years old to do half the things he's talking about. Look, he is a 30-year career politician who is desperate to talk about anything other than his record of failure on this issue, so desperate to the point that he's literally just making things up about these cases, making things up. Here's what's not made up, here's what's true. He's been in office for over 30 years. Every one of those incidents that he's talking about and putting on TV, that happened on his watch, his. He's in Congress, there was a bipartisan bill supported by the Border Patrol Union, served up to him on a silver platter. And if he was even the slightest bit serious about solving this problem, he would have done the right thing and supported it. But he's not. He cares more about having a problem to campaign on than solving the problem. And the only thing he's offered to the voters over the last 2 months on this issue, not solutions, not a plan, not a vision, he's offered conspiracy theories about Haitian immigrants eating pets in Ohio. That is incredibly irresponsible. It's dangerous. I was just speaking with a Haitian immigrant in a teachers union meeting the other day, and the effect that that has. Are you going to apologize for that tonight? I'll take that as a no. I'll take that as a no. That is not a serious solution to solving the crisis at the border. I'm serious about it.
I'd like to respond.
I'm going to give you each 10 seconds because I think you both responded to one another rather than answering the question.
I answered the question. I stand firmly
Mr. Riley,
excuse
me.
Yeah, I absolutely do.
Mark.
I absolutely do because the question you asked me was whether you can draw a direct line from the $1 million in corporate PAC checks that he's taken to the votes that he's taking, to the struggles that folks are having across the district. And the answer is absolutely yes. The advertisement you referenced talked about the $10,000 in checks he's taken from the utility monopolies while he sat on his hands while NYSEG raised rates by 62%. The ad that I ran talked about the $200,000.
It's a hell of a lot longer than 10 seconds. And that is a lie.
I'll give you the time. The $200,000 he took from the ag committee and then allowed them to jack up grocery prices and crush our small farmers.
Mr. Riley,
so
I'll
yes,
give you 30 seconds. Be fair,
30 seconds. With all due respect, that is an outright lie. First of all, this isn't like one time you argued. This wasn't 20 years ago. You worked for the most politically connected law firm in Washington, D.C., where you argued on behalf of Alejandro Mayorkas to surrender the southern border. You worked then for Al Franken, the halls of Washington, D.C., writing a mass amnesty bill that resulted, by the way, that would result in illegal immigrants not only just coming into this country, but getting cell phones and transportation
That's
and hotel.
False.
No, it's
That's
not.
False.
That's exactly. And, by the way, extending Social Security benefits, which seniors and citizens all across New York have earned to illegal immigrants. In a state, by the way, where Democrats want to extend the right to vote to illegal immigrants. And one more thing, with all due respect, Josh, you know this. The federal government doesn't set electric rates. New York State does. Let me finish. Yep. Kathy Hochul and your allies set electric rates. And I joined Democrat Congressman Pat Ryan in calling for the resignation of leadership because we've been fighting on behalf of people
gentlemen,
who are paying too much.
I must have missed the letter. A 62% rate hike. You're fact checking this.
Mr. Riley, Mr. Molinaro, I've got to remind you
what he did.
Rather than speaking to one another, I have to remind you, there are a lot of people watching. I invite you to speak to them. Let's not make this a discussion just between two people. There are a lot of people watching, so let's move on now at this point. Chantel Destra is managing editor of New York Now. She has her next question. Chantel.
Now, this question is for the congressman. You've been criticized for amplifying unfounded claims that Haitian migrants in Springfield, Ohio, were capturing and eating pets. What is your response to the criticism that your claims are both inflammatory and dangerous to migrants?
You've missed all of the year and a half of us arguing for real border security. By the way, I voted for the strictest border security policy in generations. And the President of the United States chose not to negotiate, not to engage, and instead turn his back. He turned his back, by the way, on Mayor Eric Adams, who was begging for assistance. Congressman Pat Ryan and I called for emergency action to intervene. And this administration did no such thing. Why? Because they used the legal argument that Josh Riley made to surrender the border. Beyond that, a year ago, we had a woman raped and abused by a illegal immigrant in the Catskill region of New York. Only weeks ago, we know that we have an illegal immigrant who kills a woman in Syracuse, rapes a woman in the Capital District. No one wanted to write about those things. People weren't angry enough about that. Yes, it was out of character for me. Ultimately, I certainly respect those who want to come to this nation legally, and we need to have a process that supports that. But I will not back down in making the argument that because of the policies of this administration, we are less safe at our southern border, we are less safe at our northern border, and we've created a system where New Yorkers and upstate New Yorkers get treated as second-class citizens, and they're angry. And I, as their representative, am angry for them.
Mr. Riley,
I would love to hear him answer the question as to whether he stands by a dangerous and harmful conspiracy theory that he's been peddling. He didn't answer the question. I don't know, maybe you're embarrassed about it of saying that. I would be if those words had come out of my mouth. Look, here's the thing. Both parties have failed us terribly with respect to the southern border. Both parties. I've been very critical of the Biden administration. And the congressman is reading off a litany of horrors. All of them happened on his watch. All of them. He had a bill sitting on his desk that was bipartisan. He said they didn't negotiate. They did negotiate. That was the result of the negotiations. That was the result of the negotiations. And instead of doing the right principled thing and accepting that bill and supporting it, he did what was politically expedient. Because this is what you would expect out of a 30-year career politician who is desperate to continue his political career.
Raga Justin is an investigative reporter for the Times Union. Raga.
For Mr. Riley, Vice President Kamala Harris, your party's presidential nominee, made headlines when she said she no longer supports a ban on hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Do you agree with New York State's existing ban? And do you support ongoing efforts to expand the definition of fracking to one that uses carbon dioxide in the process instead of water, the common method when the practice was banned a decade ago?
Yeah, so I look at our energy policy in two respects on this. First, in the short term, we have got to lower energy costs for folks across upstate New York. It's one of the biggest challenges we have with economic development across the region, are high energy costs. And look, it goes back to something we talked about today. A lot of you just saw a 62% increase in your NYSEG bills. When I'm your congressperson, I'm gonna fight like hell to make sure that doesn't happen, because I'm not taking their corporate PAC checks and I don't have to do whatever it is they want me to do. Longer term, and so let me answer your question. In the shorter term, I think we need to look at all available energy options. I am deeply skeptical, however, of these projects that are proposed by big corporations to take energy in upstate New York, which we've found too often in other states ends up all getting taken out to the boardrooms and all taken out to Texas. So that is a source of deep skepticism for me. But bigger picture, longer term, we've got to have a vision about how we get to true energy independence and lower costs. And for me, what that vision is advanced manufacturing in the United States, building the solar panels here in the United States, here in upstate New York, not in China or Mexico, building lithium ion batteries at the Huron campus in Endicott, where my family used to work before those closed down. We should be investing in that advanced manufacturing to rebuild the middle class and also have a sustainable energy policy. My opponent voted to kill all of those investments in green energy manufacturing under the Inflation Reduction Act. That's deeply irresponsible.
Mr. Molinaro, you have 45 seconds.
First, I certainly support an all of the above approach to energy. We once were greater, we had greater American energy independence. We have to drive up both our capacity to refine American oil products and not rely on Venezuela and countries around the world that don't have our interests in heart. We ought to be supporting nuclear technology and micronuclear technology. And certainly, I've led the bipartisan coalition in supporting a renewable and alternative energy, and in fact called on the administration and Congress to ensure that we continue to direct tax credits and assistance to the kind of manufacturing that does make up upstate New York: solar panel technology, wind turbine technology, battery technology, all of which is the next wave of manufacturing here in upstate New York and throughout the southern tier. It is rich to listen to you suggest that somehow you are pure on this issue. It's your law firm that represented Chevron. It is the work that you did for the very corporations have been stealing jobs from upstate New Yorkers, and it's why 36 unions across upstate New York support my candidacy.
We have a great deal to get to. Our viewers are waiting to hear from you. We'll give you 10 seconds. Honestly,
we have a lot to respond to that.
Well, can you save that for your closing statement, Fraga?
Congressman Molinaro, local officials have long been concerned with a dearth of appropriate and affordable child care options in upstate New York. How would you go about promoting affordable childcare policies for New Yorkers with young children who are struggling to balance working outside the home and raising their families?
I know this one firsthand. I have a father of four children, one of whom lives with a disability. Try accessing daycare with an individual with an intellectual, physical, and developmental disability. We know the challenge. My wife's a preschool teacher. Believe me, we get it. And one of the biggest challenges in upstate New York, beside housing costs, is access to affordable daycare, which is why I led the effort to ensure that the tax bill that we adopted in the House this year includes an expansion of the child tax credit. I absolutely believe that this is one of those tools that has really not only helped families lift themselves out of poverty, but has provided real meaningful relief to middle-class families. Additionally, my legislation that I've worked on across the aisle would create a pathway to life sciences so that we can educate and encourage people to enter the field of daycare so that we can expand the workforce so there are more available daycare options for families. And at the same time, we've got to be sure that businesses governments, also provide assistance when it comes to daycare, which is why I lobby these corporations as they come into upstate New York to actually create set-asides for ensuring access to daycare and that they invest in daycare for their families. I was the first county when I served as county executive to extend family leave and paid assistance to county employees for the purposes of not only caring for their children as they welcome them into the world, but provide support as they get older. It is really one of the biggest challenges. We in the state, by the way, should also be leveraging Medicaid assistance because counties are required to do this, Medicaid assistance to drive down the cost of daycare and provide support for those who are in the field of providing daycare.
Mr. Molinaro, thank you. Mr. Riley, 45 seconds.
Universal paid family leave, universal child care. We have to make that investment in working families across this district. I was just at a picket line with our healthcare workers at SEIU in the Catskills, and usually when I'm with them talking about things, it's about challenges in the healthcare industry, and the thing I heard over and over was the access to childcare and housing prices. We should make those investments so that people don't have to choose between their job and the childcare that they need. But look, I say that all the time, and one of the questions I always get is, well, Josh, how are we gonna pay for it? How are we gonna pay for it? Nobody ever asks how we're going to pay for the $114 billion tax cut that he voted to give big corporations and billionaires in his first months in Congress. Nobody asks how we're going to pay for the $20 billion per year we're spending on oil subsidies, something he voted for as part of HR 1. Nobody asks how we're going to pay for the carried interest loophole to give billions of dollars to hedge fund managers. We got to start investing in our people.
Mr. Riley, thank you very much. Ian Pickus is the news director at WAMC.
For Mr. Riley, do you believe Democrats minimizing their private concerns with President Joe Biden's performance hurt public trust in the party and down-ballot candidates like you?
To be really candid here, I haven't given it a lot of thought, and most voters don't ask me about that. They ask me about policy issues. I will tell you what frustrates me about the Democratic Party and what has probably caused an erosion in some trust. I think both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have completely failed us with respect to the border. I think it is the worst of politics to have all of these politicians just playing around with the issue because they think that's what's best for their political career. We need real solutions to this problem. Bipartisan, comprehensive immigration reform, sending thousands of additional agents to the border. We could have done that. There was a bipartisan bill on the table that he rejected. New technologies that are sitting on a shelf right now collecting dust. If only they would fund it, it would detect the fentanyl that's coming across the border. Both parties have completely failed on that issue. Another example I'll give you where I have disagreements and concerns with my own party is with respect to trade policy over the years. It was Democrats and Republicans who got us into terrible trade deals, letting China into WTO, getting us into NAFTA. Those trade policies decimated the community that I grew up in when I saw my friends and my family and my neighbors lose their jobs. That's something that we have to reverse, and I think both parties need to come together and do that.
Mr. Molinaro?
When the Democratic Party woke up and realized that Joe Biden could no longer serve as president, Josh was asked whether he supports the vice president. One day he did, the next day he didn't.
That's not true.
Still, you support the vice president.
I've been very, very clear on where I stand on this. I've been very clear that I support the nominee, and after that happened, I've been very clear
and
where I am. I'm not supporting the guy who ripped away Roe v. Wade and tried to overturn an election. I'll tell you that much.
Yes, with all
you are, I know, but
and with all and with all the respect, when he was asked whether or not he would support the vice president, he didn't have an answer. In fact, one day he did, and the next day he said he didn't. But you wouldn't know a lot of this because here we are in the only debate that my opponent would agree to. We've agreed to six debates.
I've agreed to three.
He agreed to one and backed out of another. And the difficult questions that face the people we represent aren't being asked of Josh Riley, because Josh Riley has spent the last several months hiding behind $20 million in campaign ads. Now, I think that we ought to hold both parties accountable, but I don't think it's right, certainly, to be lectured to about democracy from an individual who's wrapped himself around a party that woke up one day, threw Joe Biden under the bus, and then put Kamala Harris in office into the nominee without a single vote.
He wants to have a debate about debates. Let's have a debate. Let's talk.
Mr. Molinaro, Mr. Riley,
yes,
I would invite you again to speak to voters and not to one another. And let's move on to our next question.
For Mr. Riley, polls find rising costs are a persistent concern amongst voters nationwide. How are you planning to address the issue of inflation if elected to Congress this year?
The challenges that folks face across this district, and I think across the country, it all comes back to corruption in our politics. I said this in my opening, that the deck is stacked against working folks in this country, and it's stacked in favor of these big corporate PACs and the corrupt politicians they pay to do what's best for them. Let me give you just a couple of examples. There was a young family who I met in Liberty over Cinco de Mayo. They were probably late 20s, early 30s, and had two little kids. And when I talk to families across this district, when I talk to voters, my first question is never, are you a Democrat or Republican? Who are you gonna vote for? My first question is always, what is it that keeps you up at night? What is it that you and your family are thinking about at the kitchen table? And this family told me, Josh, we're really concerned because the grocery prices are going up. NYSEG just announced a 62% rate increase, and we're already struggling to pay the rent and keep a roof over the kids' heads. And you gotta think to yourself, how the heck can that be happening in the United States of America that this young couple is having to deal with those challenges? And the answer to it is something I think we all know. It's corruption in our politics. The grocery prices are going up because the big ag monopolies have paid my opponent $200,000 sitting on the ag committee to cut the law enforcement that's supposed to enforce the antitrust laws. The utility monopolies have paid my opponent tens of thousands of dollars to put his head in the sand when NYSEG went to jack up rates. The real estate industry has paid my opponent a ton of money to not address the housing crisis in this country. We have got to get the corporate PAC money out of our politics and get back to a politics for people.
Mr. Molinaro.
When the communities, when the families in this district speak to me, when I travel all 11 counties of upstate New York, I know, because I've lived in upstate New York, I know the pain that they feel. We feel it too. I pay Central Hudson's high rates. I've shouldered the burden of property taxes, and I know that the families and the farmers and the small businesses understand. We shoulder the highest burden of property taxation of any people in America. It's the reason, by the way, that upstate New York and New York leads the nation in out-migration. More people leave the state to other states than any other state in the country because of the high cost of living. We have been confronting and fighting this. When I was at local government, we cut taxes, and I continue to fight to drive down costs. No, it's why in the House tax bill we adopted this year, I fought for middle-class families. We need relief, both in income tax and property tax relief. I will continue to hold the state of New York responsible for the increase of electric rates. They're the ones driving up costs. They're the ones that are taking advantage of people who can afford it the least. And with all due respect to my opponent, he's taken in about $1 million from corporate interest. You know, he wants to make this argument about corporate PACs. $1 million from corporate interest, tens of thousands of dollars from the very corporations he worked for, the chief executives, lobbyists, the
Mr.
lawyers,
and 12,000
donations with no information about them at all. Please, don't lecture us on corruption.
Mr. Molinaro, thank you very much. Ian?
This next question is for Congressman Molinaro, and it comes from our partners at WSKG in Binghamton, who are also carrying tonight's debate. You've said that you don't support a national abortion ban, but you also oppose late-term abortions. How do you define a late-term abortion, and would you support a nationwide ban after a certain point in a pregnancy?
I have witnessed the millions of dollars that my opponent has used to lie about my record and my belief on this issue. I oppose a national ban. I said I would oppose a national ban. I oppose a national ban, and I remain committed to opposing a national ban. He's got TV ads saying I'd be the deciding vote on a national ban. I've been consistent on this. In fact, some of these publications, Times Union, CNN, called him out 2 years ago for lying about my position on abortion. I want women and families in upstate New York and across America to understand this. I absolutely respect the decision you make, and I want that decision to rest between you and your physician, not Washington, D.C. It's the reason I'm the first Republican not only to have come out and made clear my position on a national abortion ban, which I would oppose. I also led as the first Republican to embrace and support codification of IVF, which I know, speaking to families, Republican, Democrat, upstate, downstate, who all women who have made the choice to use IVF to bring life in the world, I know how heart-wrenching it can be. I believe in codifying and protecting access. It's the reason, as a Republican, I led in ensuring codification and access to birth control, because I believe at the end of the day, women ought to be respected for the choice that they make, and they ought to have access to the support and care that they need, which is why I lead a bipartisan effort to expand access to health care in rural communities like the ones we represent, ensure that there's access to prenatal and neonatal care, and we'll continue to fight to ensure that women have access and support no matter the choice they make.
Mr. Riley.
He's lying to you. He's lying to you. He voted not once, not twice, not three times, not four times. He voted 13 times in the last 2 years to restrict women's access to abortion services. When he was behind closed doors in the fall of 2022, right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, he expressed his support for an abortion ban. There's a woman I met at Hickory's Park after he took one of those many votes. Her name's Karen. She's a Marine veteran, and she has three daughters who are currently serving in the military, some of them in places that are now trying to restrict access to abortion services. And she saw my opponent's voting record, and she said, "You know, Josh, my family and I have put our lives on the line to defend freedom. And it is unacceptable to us that he's down there in Congress voting to take ours away. I'm going to make a commitment to you. You send me to Congress, I will do what he has not done. I will sponsor the Women's Health Protection Act to put Roe v. Wade back into law, because women's health care decisions are women's health care decisions, and politicians like Mark Molinaro can stay the hell out of it."
Mr. Riley, thank you. Raga.
Congressman Molinaro, you've criticized the Biden administration and Democrats, including your opponent, for the situation at the southern border. But a bipartisan compromise bill agreed to back in January was killed when former President Donald Trump pressured Republicans to abandon it, saying he didn't want to give President Biden an election year win. Why should voters believe that you are earnest about finding a solution to the situation?
I voted for the strictest border control, border security policy in generations. The Secure the American Borders Act, and by the way, co-sponsored legislation to secure the northern border. I mean, the Senate compromise, which by the way never came to the House, the Senate compromise codifies the problem and ultimately, by the way, takes taxpayer money for transportation, housing, and support to those who enter into this country illegally. $1 billion worth of your money being directed to house and transport illegal immigrants to states like New York that embrace sanctuary city policies, leaving, by the way, giving them cell phones, access to health care, $40,000 housing credits. You want to talk about pressure on housing? That is simply unacceptable. And the bill didn't secure the border, and it wasn't something that I think ought to become law. We ought to secure the border, which is what we led with. But when you ask that question, I would also pose to you, President Biden killed the House bill. Nobody wanted to negotiate the problem until after 10.5 million people entered this country. And he can argue all he wishes, but Josh Riley didn't just wake up one day and say one case he believed in surrendering the southern border. He went time and time again making the legal argument that the President of the United States doesn't have to follow the law. That the federal government could simply allow individuals to enter into this country without background checks, without consideration for criminal backgrounds. And yes, it is how a Peruvian serial killer ends up in Endicott, New York, using the very legal argument that he went 32 times before the Supreme Court to argue. This is a serious challenge, and real Americans know and feel like they're being treated as second class, because ultimately what they see is an administration that isn't willing to enforce the law. The president should have begun negotiation with the House the second we passed HR2, the second we passed the border security bill, and then negotiated an agreement. What came out ultimately of the Senate was never going to pass the Senate, and perhaps they should take seriously the very question is why we would allow 10.5 million people into this country before they would even begin the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Riley.
Yeah, can I respond to this? Boy, what does a 30-year career politician sound like? Certainly not taking any responsibility for any of the stuff that's happened in his three decades in office. I was trying to keep track of all the excuses and other people to blame here. This is the thing. He was in state and local government for decades, and when he was in state and local government, he always blamed the federal government. Now he's in the federal government, he's blaming the state and local government. At some point, do your job. Do your job. Democrats and Republicans, both parties, stop playing politics with this issue and solve it. There was a gentleman I met in Whitney Point at the county fair probably in August, and he told me that he had lost his job at a factory, and when he did, he lost his health insurance. And he turns on the TV and he sees a migrant crisis in New York City where his taxpayer dollars are being used to bail out the politicians who from both parties who are failing to do their job on it. Everybody's got to stop screwing around. The Democrats, the Republicans, stop screwing around, send the agents to the border, send the technology to the border, and get it done. It was served up to him on a silver platter. He didn't do it. I want to make one point about...
I'll give you 10 seconds.
Yeah, he said a number of times, I think his exact words were that he voted for the strictest border security bill. That bill had bipartisan opposition to it. Why? Because it literally would have criminalized our dairy industry. There's other members of Congress who have big dairy industries opposed it because that bill would have criminalized dairy farmers across upstate
New
York.
Mr. Riley, thank you.
That is absolutely untrue. In fact, we carved out protections for the dairy industry because I've lived in upstate New York and I've dealt with the dairy farms and the challenges they face.
John Duarte was wrong about that. John Duarte opposed it for exactly that reason.
You and John Duarte can have a conversation when you have some time. But more importantly, the President of the United States put into practice your legal argument. Your legal argument.
That's not true.
And then we adopted the policy that would have secured the border. Instead, this president did what you argued should be done. And here's the thing, right? You argue the president could simply, Josh Riley argues the president could simply waive any adherence to the law. The president of the United States should have enforced the law. But they used your legal argument to say he didn't have to. And that has led to some 600,000 criminal illegals entering in this country. I did my job, just like you did, by the way, your job representing Alejandro Mayorkas in court.
He's raised this a number of times. I haven't had a chance to properly address it, and I really think we'll give you that opportunity. Yeah, I think this is really important. There was one case. I don't know this magic handbag of numbers he's coming up. I don't know where that comes.
It's 32.
Do you really think that's true? I'm trying to understand.
I've read the filings. There's 32.
I'm actually really trying to understand if you actually think that's true or you just don't know what you're talking about.
I do. It's 32 filings.
Gentlemen, let's remember the viewers.
So I want to talk about this because it's really important. There's one case that I handled, and I handled it on behalf of who? Senior Homeland Security officials from Republican administrations. And what were they arguing? They argued that we have limited law enforcement resources in this country, and part of the reason we have limited law enforcement resources is because the politicians are screwing around with the issue. And so what they argued is that we should use our limited law enforcement resources for the highest priority cases, the drug traffickers, the child sex traffickers, the violent criminals. With limited law enforcement resources, you have to make choices, and they said we should choose to do the highest priority cases and not use those resources to rip little kids away from families and put them in cages. And this is the last thing I'll say on this, but this is really important. Do you know who agreed with that argument? A conservative United States Supreme Court. Just last week during the vice presidential debate, J.D. Vance agreed with it. Law enforcement agreed with it. And on June 22nd, 2018, there was a gentleman running for governor in the state of New York named Mark Molinaro who agreed with that position. He was right then. He's taken a hard right turn into the darkness.
We've gone way over on this. Forgive me for one moment, Mr. Molinaro. We've gone way long on this, but this is an important topic.
Of course
That's why we are allowing a little bit extra time, but it's going to mean going forward, you're going to have a little less time to respond.
That's perfectly fine because this is the question right now. It is a matter of priorities in this country. Josh pointed to one case, 32 separate submissions on behalf of surrendering and dismantling border security. In Trump v. Hawaii, he argued that the President of the United States didn't have the capacity to stop terrorists from entering this country. That was his argument. In U.S. v. Texas, Josh Riley argued that the President of the United States didn't have to follow the law and allow states like Texas to protect themselves from the onslaught of illegal immigrants coming into this country. And using the discretionary argument he made, this President and Alejandro Mayorkas put into practice a policy that said you could simply claim asylum and enter into this country. And what we saw is 10 million people enter into America without any background check, without any screening. And for the record, again, the Border Patrol Union supports me. Why? Because they know I take seriously the need to not only secure the border, but to lift sanctuary city policies, to reinstate Remain in Mexico, and to protect American citizens.
Mr. Molinaro,
this is really important. I think what just happened here is actually extraordinary and newsworthy. He named two cases. He keeps saying 32. I would love to hear what these other ones are. They don't exist. He named two cases.
There's 32 submissions you've made on behalf.
Mr. Molinaro, we're going to give Mr. Riley just a few seconds here.
Not true. He's just lying. The two cases, we talked about one of them. It was one that he agreed with and said so in print on June 22nd, 2018, that we should use limited law enforcement resources to traffic the drug traffickers and not to rip innocent kids away from families and put them in cages. He mentioned the Hawaii case. So you support a Muslim ban?
Because
that's what that case was.
I support keeping terrorists out of this nation because
everybody
of the policy. Because
everybody.
Of the policy.
No, no, no. No.
Because of the policy
does.
That you argued
everybody's,
for.
Everybody's,
we now have a, we have 1,000 known
Mr.
terrorists have entered this country.
Everybody supports keeping
have,
terrorists out
not
of this
you,
country.
Josh.
We do. You. We don't keep
time
terrorists.
Flies when you're having fun,
we don't keep.
We have,
no, no. This is important because this goes to who we are. No, no. This is really important because it goes to who we are as Americans and who we are as upstate New Yorkers. We do not. We do not in this country ban people from entering the United States based on religious litmus tests. We don't have signs that say no Jews allowed, no Catholics allowed, no Muslims allowed. That's what that case was about. My father-in-law wears a turban, and after 9/11, the prejudice that he faced in the country that he came to build the American dream, and to have the federal government then say, we're not going to allow you into this country based on your religion, I fought against that, and I would do it again.
Mr. Riley, thank you. Mr. Molinaro, thank you. We're going to...
You support a Muslim ban. That is a headline.
Given the conversation that we've had on border and immigration, we're going to give you each 45 seconds now to respond, and the next question is from you.
This is for Mr. Riley, and we're going to turn to the Middle East now with a two-part question. First, do you agree with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer that Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu is an impediment to peace and should be replaced with fresh elections? And do you want to see any restrictions on U.S. aid to Israel given the campaign in Gaza and the latest developments in Lebanon?
I was at Cornell University a couple days ago on October 7th to commemorate the tragic events of that day. What we saw on that day was absolutely horrific and barbaric. I want to be very clear. Hezbollah, Hamas are brutal terrorist organizations backed by Iran that need to be taken off the face of the earth. That's what I believe. You asked me about conditions on aid to Israel. Aid to Israel is already conditioned. I think Israel should be subject to the same conditions with respect to aid as any other country. It's a critically important ally for us, both because of historical and moral and geopolitical reasons. At the same time, I think there are a lot of concerns about the way the war has unfolded over the last year. It's really hard to turn on the TV and see little kids being pulled out of rubble and little kids starving and suffering. So we have to bring this war to a close. I would support a plan that would end the fighting, get our hostages out, provide humanitarian assistance where it's needed, and put us back on a path toward a two-state solution.
Mr. Molinaro, you have 45 seconds.
I was in Binghamton University and at Cornell in the days after the attacks a year ago, and made clear then what I think America should make clear, and that is we stand shoulder to shoulder with Israel. And by the way, no conditions, no restrictions. Israel has every right to defend itself and to bring about the extinction of Hamas. I saw in the moments after those attacks a brief moment where America stood united, and then we saw the ugliness of anti-Semitism that erupted around our college campuses and communities all across America. And what frightens me is Jewish citizens who have seen an escalation of hate and violence. When I go to the Hasidic communities in Sullivan County, in Greene County, these are individuals that have been living peacefully, all of a sudden have their children and their lives being upended and threats of violence brought against them. At the end of the day, we need to confront anti-Semitism as the cancer it is. And that means, yes, standing with Israel and Israel's right not only to defend itself, but to bring Hamas to its knees, to ultimately bring the hostages home. And we as a nation must make very clear that if you harbor individuals and support individuals who act out in violent and intolerant ways against Jewish Americans, that's not something to be accepted.
Can we just note the hypocrisy of someone who just announced his support for a Muslim ban and opposed the White House's task force on Islamophobia, lecturing us about bigotry?
Josh, with all due respect, please, I said, and you know, the argument in Trump v. Hawaii
was
meant to protect America from terrorists. And because of the policy that this administration has put in place, and you argued for mass amnesty, catch and release,
so
prosecutorial discretion, and sanctuary city policies, we now have 1,000 known terrorists that have entered into this country. And we have 10.5 million people who have entered into this country with 600,000 known criminals. At the end of the day, this administration abandoned the southern border and the northern border using your legal argument.
There he goes again. 30-year career politician. Blame everybody else.
We have a lot to talk about, and I know there are topics that both of you want to talk about, so let's move on.
for Mr. Riley.
Yeah, thanks.
Federal data has shown a provisional decrease in opioid overdose deaths across upstate New York for the first time in years, leading to some optimism that current public health policies may be effective at combating one of the state's worst public health crises. Do you believe New York politicians have effectively dealt with the opioid crisis, or do you believe there is more to be done? If elected, what policies would you support to deal both with fentanyl trafficking and with opioid overdoses?
There's a huge amount that still needs to be done. I grew up in Endicott, factory town. Just about everybody worked in the plants or was somehow connected to it. Mike Morley's folks had the flower shop down on Washington Ave. Everybody was connected to the plant in some way. And when the politicians and the special interests closed those plants down and shipped those jobs overseas, we saw real challenges across our community, and the opioid epidemic ripping through was one of them. One of my really good friends down on the corner on Bursell Street was killed because of it. I was actually just with his mom a couple of days ago. Our buddy Mike was a couple blocks back, was killed because of it. One of my best friend's mom was killed because of it. I've seen the damage this has caused. Two things I want to do about it. Number one, secure the damn border. Send the technology, get it off the shelves, go do your job, pay for the technology to go to the border to detect the fentanyl. Pay for it, get it done, stop the fentanyl from coming in. And second, we need a surge in treatment. We do not have enough beds across this district to deal with this challenge. In Broome County, back in 2017, I advocated in a bipartisan way for a treatment facility to go there. It was very effective for the folks it could serve, but the demand far outstrips the supply.
Mr. Molinaro.
I have witnessed far too many people who struggle with substance use disorder and have lost their lives to fentanyl and synthetic opioids. Lindsay in Sullivan County, who leads efforts to assist those who live with substance use disorder, lost her own child. She knows what we know, which is that far too much fentanyl and synthetic opioids are pouring in across our border. Secure the border. It's why I voted for Secure the American Border Act. To not only support law enforcement at the border, but to intercede in drug trafficking. What we must do is secure the border, enforce the law. In states like New York with cashless bail, we let those who prey on young people, on American citizens, get away with continuing to take lives with no repercussions. I have supported additional resources for local law enforcement to engage in drug interceding in drug trafficking. It's why those law enforcement agencies that have endorsed in this race support my candidacy, because they know that we've stood shoulder to shoulder with them. And as a local elected official, I led the creation of the community-based mental health and substance use treatment program, which is now the model that the state of New York uses. We must have access to treatment for those who deal with substance use disorder. We need to meet people where they are and help them to get to a life of greater independence, not reliant on substance use, and ultimately get the treatment they deserve. And it's why I'm working with Jason Gardner, Democrat and county executive in Broome County, to bring about that kind of treatment. It's why we're working in Sullivan County to do the same. I think every community in America should have access, and every person should have access to treatment.
Mr. Molinaro, thank you very much. Chantel?
For Congressman Molinaro, in 2016, you said that you refused to vote for Donald Trump and wrote in former Representative Chris Gibson instead. Yet 8 years later, after Trump has been convicted of dozens of felonies and has been impeached twice, plus lost the last election, you've endorsed him. Why the different approach this year?
I've watched these last 4 years of inflation pouring down and burdening upstate New Yorkers. I've seen the cost and the burden on small businesses and families and farmers in upstate New York. I've watched as this administration abandoned the southern border, allowed 10.5 million people enter into this country. And I've seen, quite frankly, far too much devastation, the loss of lives because of substance use disorder and fentanyl and synthetic opioids pouring into this country. And I believe that this administration abandoned its responsibility. I have a hard time embracing somebody who runs for office and says, pay no attention to all the crises we created over these last 3 years. Hire me. I'm going to fix them. I just believe that ultimately we need a government that respects the people of upstate New York, that focuses on driving down cost, secures the border, protects Americans, and creates opportunity for everyone, regardless of their background.
Mr. Riley.
You're asking me, that was a very different question. Oh, a response to why he's supporting Donald Trump? I don't know that I can necessarily speak to that, except, you know, if I were to guess what the actual answer to that question is, it's politics. Back in 2017, he was running for governor of New York, a very blue state, and it probably wasn't good for his politics to support President Trump at that time. Now he's running for a different office in a different place where he put his finger in the air, saw which way the wind was blowing, and decided to change his position. By the way, it's exactly what he's done with respect to abortion and women's health care decisions. For 30 years, he's been a politician, and every single step of the way, he's been anti-choice. Now he realizes it's election season, and that's not a popular position to have, and now all of a sudden he's saying that he thinks things differently. You can find out for yourself. This actually isn't a matter of debate as to opinion. These are facts and they're knowable. You can go to MolinaroFacts.com and you can see for yourself all 13 of the votes that he took to restrict women's access to abortion services.
You're lying again, and I do think it is the height of hypocrisy to have Josh Riley lecture us on women's issues. It was your law firm that represented rapist Harvey Weinstein, and it was the information team that you led that silenced, bullied, and intimidated Harvey Weinstein's victims. You consistently have lied about my position. No. And I absolutely make this commitment. I believe and have always believed that the decision should be left to a woman and a physician, not Washington. I oppose a national abortion ban, and I will continue to work to expand access to the treatment, support, and care necessary, no matter the choice a woman makes.
You know what would be great? Because he can actually put some action to his words. Will you commit tonight to co-sponsor the Women's Health Protection Act and put Roe v. Wade back into law?
I will do nothing that diminishes access here in the state of New York, which that legislation could result in.
Nope, it would just put Roe v. Wade back into law. It's sitting on your desk. You could go do it. If you believed anything that was coming out of your mouth,
gentlemen,
you could sign on to the bill.
You can continue this conversation after we've stopped, but we have to move on. Ian has the next question.
For Congressman Molinaro now, Republican candidate and former President Trump has still not conceded the 2020 defeat. If he loses the race to Vice President Harris next month and again disputes the result without evidence, will you vote to certify Harris's victory?
I will certify the results sent to us from the states. That's my commitment. And Josh, I want to return to this because we have heard this consistently. With all due respect, Josh, there's only one person on the stage who's made millions of dollars working in Washington, D.C., and it sure the heck isn't me. You have consistently argued and made this, you can see the TV ads, corrupt politician. It's a canny line that people like you use to somehow suggest you haven't been working the halls of Washington. You are the problem in Washington, D.C. You trade relationships and power and think you can come back to New York and buy yourself a congressional seat. I mean, with all due respect, I gave myself to public service because I actually believe it. I've been with families that have lost loved ones to fentanyl and synthetic opioids. I've sat with families who have seen their homes destroyed because of fire and flood and responded. You have a TV ad out that says, I have done nothing in 30 years. With all due respect, 20 years in local government led on reducing the cost of living for the people we serve, led on mental health and substance use disorder, and we have made a lifetime commitment to ensuring those who live with mental health and intellectual, physical, and developmental disabilities have a government that respects them. You can consistently and continually argue that somehow you're free of the corruption. Millions of dollars poured into your campaign from corporate interests, millions of dollars backing your campaign from corporations, and 12,000 shadowy contributions from around the country with no information. You're the one who took $30,000 from George Soros, not-for-profit, to do what? I don't know. But nevertheless, you took those resources.
Mr. Riley.
This actually isn't that complicated. I don't take corporate PAC money.
You
I never
do.
Happen. I don't.
You
I
do.
Don't.
It is filtered.
This is my time. You had your time.
I understand.
You had
you've
your time.
You've interrupted
your
me just about every time.
Time.
You have accepted corporate dollars.
Can you guys moderate this debate? He had his time. I don't take corporate PAC money, period. Never have, never will. It is the root of corruption in our politics. He has taken nearly $1 million in corporate PAC checks, and you can draw a direct line from the checks that he's stuffing in his pockets to the votes that he's taken to jack up the grocery prices, jack up the utility
no
prices.
No such thing. No such thing.
And this is still my time. This is still my time. There's a clock there. You can see the time.
Please don't lecture me.
I'm just asking for my time. Give me the courtesy to have your time, and then you can
You've
have
interrupted
yours.
Me every time I've had an answer, Josh.
We'll give you another 10 seconds after this.
He said that my position or that I had said he hadn't done anything.
That's your position.
Can you please, I know this is hard, I just need you to give me an opportunity to speak. He said that my position is that he hasn't done anything during his political career. That's not my position. He voted to give $114 billion in tax cuts to billionaires and big corporations. He voted to cut heating assistance for seniors. He voted for an over 20% cut to Head Start programs that are desperately, desperately needed. And you just can't escape your voting record. You voted 13 times to restrict access to abortion services. And this is what's going to happen. He's going to say that's not true. And you're going to go to MolinaroFacts.com and you're going to see for yourself. Well,
the website your campaign created.
We want to be sure we have enough time for you gentlemen to keep.
My campaign didn't create the votes. Are you denying the votes?
To provide closing statements. In the meantime, Chantel has our next question. And you'll have 30 seconds to respond.
Mr. Riley, do you plan to vote for the Equal Rights Amendment on New York's November ballot this year?
I don't know how I can be any more clear on this. Women's health care decisions belong to women and not politicians. Roe v. Wade being overturned was one of the worst Supreme Court cases in the history of this country. I think Citizens United, which opened the floodgates to dark money in politics, was one of the worst. There have been a number of them, but the Dobbs decision was one of the worst. The Equal Rights Amendment will undo that damage by restoring Roe v. Wade into law. My opponent, he's been in office for 30 years, and he has been anti-choice every single step of the way, including back when he was in the state government, he opposed putting Roe v. Wade back into law. And we are now seeing the damage that that is causing across the country. Not only is the Equal Rights Amendment in the state, but we should be talking about what's happening federally on this issue. I still didn't hear an answer to my question. The Women's Health Protection Act has been sitting on his desk. It would restore Roe v. Wade into law. I'll sponsor it. He hasn't.
Mr. Molyneux.
The amendment that you referred to would codify biological males playing in girl sports. Women have fought very hard in this state and in this nation to have equal access to athletics, equal respect under the law, and this amendment goes too far. But what also troubles me is that the amendment would extend constitutional protections to illegal immigrants. And this is all a part of the Democratic plan in the state and city of New York to expand access and protection to illegal immigrants under the New York State Constitution would then lead to what New York City tried to do only months ago, which is extend voting rights.
Mr. Molyneux, thank you very much. Because we have closing statements, and neither of you will get an opportunity. Mr. Riley, first with your closing statements, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, thank you all again for hosting. Look, I'm a Democrat. I come from a Republican family, and I know that today our politics seem hopelessly divided. I've had an opportunity, though, to travel all across this district and talk to folks from all walks of life and all different political backgrounds, and you've given me hope. I know that we are not nearly as divided as a people as the political establishment and the special interests would have us believe. We're hardworking, decent people who have each other's backs. Those are upstate New York values that unite us, and those are the values I'm going to take with me to Congress.
Mr. Riley, thank you. Mr. Molyneux.
I truly appreciate the honor of, one, being here, and two, representing you in the House of Representatives. I will say this without question. This was a spirited debate, and I have crisscrossed this district for the last 2 years, meeting tens of thousands of people that I serve. I serve you. I know that. I know that we are supposed to respond and be responsible to you. It's the reason, by the way, our office reaches out to citizens and residents, regardless of political background. When you call us and ask for us to help, we don't ask your political affiliation, we don't ask who you voted for, we just ask how we can help, and we want to help. I am the second most bipartisan member of Congress because I will work with Republicans and Democrats to get the job done and serve the people of upstate New York. I am asking for your support to continue to do the work on your behalf.
Thank you, gentlemen. I should point out that our consortium invited other area candidates for Congress to debate this season, and the two of you are the only ones who agreed, and for that, you should both be applauded. Thank you also to our panel of journalists here tonight. It is exactly 26 days till Election Day. Please get out there and exercise your right to vote. On behalf of our consortium and all of us here at News Channel 13, we wish you a good night.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.